Well, now at 9 minutes past 10, she leads a whānau of more than 78,000 iwi members, including their near $2 billion worth of assets. My next guest is Chief Executive of Te Runanga o Ngāi Tahu, Arihia Bennett. She's been in the role for 11 years, overseeing all of Ngāi Tahu's operations, including farming, seafood, tourism and investment. She's also served as Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Commissioner, been on the board of Barnardo's New Zealand and the Christchurch Women's Refuge, now known as Aviva. She's a current member of the Global Women's Network and the Tuahiwi Māori Women's Welfare League. Now, in 2008, she was made a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to Māori and the community. Arihia Bennett is a social worker by profession from a whānau steeped in community service. She lives in Tuahiwi in North Canterbury with three generations of whānau and is with us now. Tēnā koe, kia ora. Thank you very much for your time and for joining us on RNZ National.
Tēnā koe, Susie, and thank you for having me this morning.
Let's start with, I suppose, your background and how and where you grew up. You whakapapa both to Ngāi Tahu and to Ngāti Porou.
Yes, I grew up here in Ōtautahi and with strong links to Tuahiwi, which is in my early years was a long drive every weekend, but today where I live, in Tuahiwi, it's probably about 20 to 30 minutes drive into the city. So my mother is Ngāi Tahu and also of English descent. And my father is Ngāti Porou and also Ngāpui descent. So we had a fabulous mix of cultural, both Māori and also our English whānau as well, as we were growing up here in Christchurch.
We said your parents were very community focused, your dad teaching te reo, your mum in the Māori Women's Welfare League. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, it's a really, if you can think about 1950s and 60s, a lot of Māori were making their way into the cities to find new work. My father was a native speaker, brought up in both Tokumaru Bay and on the east coast, Waipiro Bay. And so he travelled further south to Ōtautahi, Christchurch, and made his life here, meeting my mother, who also was one of five daughters. Her mother, as I mentioned, was English, and also my Paua was in the Māori Battalion, and he was killed in the Māori Battalion when my mother was 3 years old. And so we had that beautiful mix of right through from our childhood, right into the work that they both became involved in. My mother, as part of a scheme where those in the Māori Battalion, when they had children, they were able to send them off to college. And my mother went to Te Waipounamu Girls College here in Christchurch, which went right through, I think, into the 70s. And she built a strong connection with not only her own whānau, but also an engagement in the community. She went off and undertook nursing, and then later became involved after she raised our family, five of us. We grew up and then joined the Tamariki Order, the Well Child Program, under the Māori Women's Welfare League. And that really became a real a backbone to our whānau. And the Māori Women's Welfare League was really sort of woven throughout our upbringing and our engagement into our later life, right through to when my mother passed in 2018. And on my father's side, when he came south, as many did, he went to the freezing works. And of course, when the freezing works closed down, I think, in the mid to late 80s. He was encouraged to go into education, like a number of native speakers, and he was really supported and encouraged by the likes of Marion Hobbs, who at that time was a school principal here, I think at Avonside Girls High School. And Dad, from there, Dad went into teaching at high school, went through to the Teachers College, and then picked up a role here at one of the primary schools and helped really helped blossom and developed tikanga roa reo or bilingual education in the primary sector. So it's a fabulous sort of being in a family where our family was totally immersed with our cultural connections back in Tuahiwi and also up in Ngāti Porou. In fact, I grew up learning all of the Ngāti Porou waiata, and our family were deeply involved in kapa haka in our early days. So, yes, it was a fabulous upbringing.
A strong focus on education, as you mentioned there, a strong work ethic too. How did you see that playing through your childhood, and what was it that led you to want to be a social worker?
Well, I because I was so involved in community sports, our family were engaged in a number of sports. We were very sporty, but also our parents not only worked one job. You know, I can remember my dad having two or three jobs. Their real focus, Susie, was on education, and we all went to. They saved enough for us all to go to private schools, and of course, the introduction to college or private school education was completely a big change for myself and some of our and my siblings. But they were absolutely adamant that education was critical, and so they. I can remember as a child in the evenings when Dad would get home. From the freezing works, we'd all get in the little car together and we'd go off to commercial cleaning jobs where my parents would do commercial cleaning in the city. And we would all help. We'd empty the rubbish bins and that when I came to know later on that that was all about ensuring that there was enough money coming into the home, the work ethic of us all participating, being involved in what I call now is that whānau economy and the thrust of that, those funds going into education. And we, you know, my parents then went on and we had a small business, a community dairy where we all grew up working in that dairy and we learned the total practice, the ethics and the responsibilities of being in a small family business. That, you know, and that's not strange to a number of our families across our community, across the country, and across the world as well. And I think that's where we built that work ethic.
What sort of motivation has it been for you around the well-being of communities of whānau, of tamariki in your work?
Well, right from high school, I knew that I wanted to be involved in something that was around families and communities. And so I was really quite focused on moving into a social work background. And my early days were on internships in places like used to be called the Department of Māori Affairs, so it's called Te Puni Kōkiri now. But I really grew in those early days with those experiences, getting around with a number of kaumātua and Māori leaders of that time as a sort of a 19, 20-year-old, extremely impressionable around learning, travelling across different marae and learning about the kawa, the tikanga, the protocols, And of course, with those experiences, I really built those connections into different communities. And then that took me on to probably one of the highlights of my career. Probably the first 10 years of my career was in residential social work. And it was through coaches and mentors back then around supporting me to develop a career in residential social work, which was about getting alongside young people, building relationships, and finding ways to actually enable them to express the best in themselves where they haven't had that opportunity in their lives growing up. So I think that was an extraordinary experience through my years of my 20s, and that really sort of grounded me into the foundation of working in social work and then going off to university and becoming educated. And what that did, that sort of that academic education really consolidated my years of experience, and it really gave me that grounding to actually then branch out and move right across and work with families and communities. And of course, back on the home front, with both my mum and my dad, dad being involved in te reo Māori and working with whānau and communities around building and enhancing te reo Māori, and mum with the Māori Women's Welfare League and also Tamariki Ora, you just couldn't go past being immersed in family and in culture and in society.
How did some of those skills and experience lead you towards your role that you hold at Ngāi Tahu?
Well, one of the things I always say, Susie, is that that real grounding of engagement, relationships, enabling and empowering, and looking at sort of short, medium, and looking for the best in people and communities. I think a lot of that translates into the role that I have now. I've never sort of veered away from that. And I do say on some occasions when I speak with different groups, I'm still a registered social worker. I think working across the role of as Chief Executive Officer of Te Rūnanga, it's really important that I acknowledge that role as one of many in terms of being a steward or a kaitiaki. And my task is really to coordinate, to collaborate, and to bring communities together so that they can find the best way to sort of enhance and develop. And one of the big things that is occurring now is not only in terms of what we call whānau rangatiratanga or self-determination, it's now strengthening across communities, across regions, where we're seeing that real sense of mana motuhake, where people are and communities and marae, rūnanga, are really empowering and enabling within themselves to actually build and strengthen their whānau and their community. So, yeah, I think those skills going way back are really easily transferable and relatable skills to working right across this whole broad sector of Te Rūnanga o Ngāi Tahu.
Listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National, our feature guest today is Chief Executive of Ngāi Tahu, Rihia Bennett, who is with us. Now, of course, Ngāi Tahu, a big operation these days. One of the very first treaty settlements to be signed back in the 90s. How much of a turning point was that for Ngāi Tahu's modern-day fortunes?
Oh, look, I think those 7 generations leading up to the settlement and the skill and the art of those strategic negotiators with our kaumātua and whānau right behind them as They travelled right throughout our whole Ngāi Tahu Takiwā region to collectivise the strength in the collective iwi itself was an extraordinary turning point for Ngāi Tahu. And it's so extraordinary, Susie. It's so critical, important for us today as we continue to build and grow, that we mustn't forget where we've come from. And that is so important that we ground that knowledge and information, that history, within our foundation, and we continue to articulate that, and we continue to share it not only with our own Ngāi Tahu whānau, but those who are friends and the wider community. And there's also, today there's such a society has placed a real significance on, when we talk about wealth and health, there's a real society focus on financial wealth. And of course, we have to live, but we also have to be mindful of the health and well-being, because what is the point of having a wealthy iwi when you have an unhealthy iwi? So, there's a dual focus here on building from flax roots right to ensuring that the organisation brings that tradition and history and that knowledge protection, as well as going out into the world and making sure we're at the forefront, being innovative and looking for that strategic commercial acumen and driving that into the community. And also that must reflect the culture and the people that we are.
Of course, nearly $2 billion worth of assets now at Ngāi Tahu, hundreds of thousands of iwi members, and for you, how closely meshed are those two things, and to be able to use that wealth for good, and in what way?
Yes, we've got about 78,000 whānau members. And also interesting in terms of our population, it's an aging population. So we've sort of got about 45% of our whānau are under the age of 30. So we know each year when we look at what we call a investment of a financial investment back into our whānau, we need to be careful about how that funding is placed back across our whānau. We have a tribal governance who set the priorities around well-being, around economy, small business development, environment, many aspects of education, health. And so when we think about the funding that goes back into the community, and I think to date, since settlement, it's been about $740 million that is driven back directly into running marae, rebuilding infrastructure, and looking at enhancing and growing whānau at the flax roots. So it's important for our whānau to be connected back into where the whakapapa comes from. But also, as part of our registration, we know that we have a lot of about 32,000 whānau members actually live outside our tribal takiwā or our tribal region. So te rūnanga and our papatipu rūnanga and our marae have that responsibility of ensuring ways to that our whānau can connect back in. And I guess the first is we actually have to keep infrastructure updated so that technology, our way of inviting our whānau exists if you live across the world or if you live in the North Island or in Australia. And we have to be able to make sure that they have that ability to connect back through into any of these programs of activity that our governance have set, or they have that ability to come home to their papatipu rūnanga. And I think the role or the foundation of te rūnanga is to ensure that we continue to find pathways to enable our whānau to keep engaged so they can be enriched in their sense of who they are, what our culture is, so that they have that ability to pass that on wherever, you know, whānau live. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge that some of our whānau grow up overseas or never being present here in Te Waipounamu, but we have to find ways to enrich their sense of belonging so that they know their history, that they can reach into through, you know, online knowledge protection, digital tools, or different ways of coming back engaging. So I think it's a really important role that we have.
What is your ultimate aspiration for Te Rūnanga o Ngāi Tahu, and indeed for all iwi?
My ultimate aspiration really fundamentally sits back in that sort of what I call the whānau rangatiratanga, that iwi exist and will continue to exist generation after generation to enable whānau members to be woven into their sense of who they are as Ngāi Tahu, so that they know who what their culture is, and that they can enable that culture to live and breathe going forward. And to be able to do that, we have a responsibility to ensure whānau can live a life of fullness, where they can raise their whānau, they can have a home, they can have good health, have good employment, enable them to be great protectors and kaitiaki of the environment, enabling them to bring through practices of mahinga kai, taking care of the environment around them. All of those things that I'm sure, Susie, that each of us want for our whānau, so that they can pass that on to their families and families after that.
Ai, ngā mihi nui, thank you very much for your time today. That is Arihia Bennett, the Chief Executive of Te Rūnanga o Ngāi Tahu.